Greetings, Adventure Sling podcast listeners. You are listening to the Adventure Sling podcast, the podcast where we speak adventure. Aaron is here with me today to introduce our guest in a few moments, but what's up, Aaron?
You know, just staying busy. Mm-hmm. You know how it is. How are you? How are things?
Same. Summer has flown by. I know we're still in it, and looking at the forecast for the coming week, we are not escaping that heat anytime soon.
Fortunately.
But we're used to heat. We have kept the heat on with New Varden and developing things that continues to progress all the time and is looking beautiful.
Yes. Yes, we're definitely starting to, with New Varden, evolve into this stage where it's just coming together, feeling much more polished, much more consistent with itself, and really pleased with how that process has gone so far and where it's at now.
Yeah. Yeah. Our listeners may or may not know that we are actually playing a campaign of New Varden in our home group and how much we're enjoying that. Actually, it's nice when you get this far along in the process and the mechanics are working well and they're, you know, gameplay is smooth, and people who have not necessarily been on the day to day are using the system and finding it enjoyable. I know one of our players mentioned at the end of the session last time, what a fun story it was that was developing. And this comes from, you know, I trust him, you know what I'm talking about. I trust him to give that kind of feedback honestly, because if it weren't working right, he would also point that out. And that has not been the case.
Yes, absolutely. And it's really sad. It's satisfying to see the rules coming together how they're intended to. And it's also satisfying to catch those things that aren't working as intended. And it's really easy to not, you know, to miss them while you're actually in development, looking at the paper, writing, and trying to theorize. When things actually hit the table, though, is when you really see what really works and what doesn't. And that's been giving us a lot of good insight.
Yeah, you don't want the brakes to lock up. That's the main thing. Absolutely. Hit the brakes all of a sudden and things come to a screeching stop because they're not working right. And we haven't had that struggle. So yay, that's very cool.
Absolutely.
So today we're going to talk to Todd from Todd Moonbounce. He's going to chat with us a little bit about a lot of things. And I really don't want to give anything away. So maybe we should just go talk to Todd.
Yeah, let's do that.
Excellent. We're happy to welcome Todd Moonbounce with us today, or Todd, as we know you on a more personal level. Todd, welcome.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to chat with you both.
Yeah, glad to have you in here.
Absolutely, definitely. So here we are to talk about RPGs, games in general, the culture, the media that surrounds it, anything that comes to mind. We do generally like to know maybe where you got into tabletop gaming, particularly tabletop role-playing games. How did you get introduced to it, or when did you start?
Yeah, always the great first question there. For me, I think I've been in the space a little over 3 years now, so relatively new compared to some others. And I think I always, when I think of this question, I always try to go back to where that was. I definitely give a lot of credit to Stranger Things. I think that was, if it wasn't the thing to kind of spark it, it pushed me into it. At least I think there was, for some reason, just stumbled across the concept or what the industry of tabletop RPGs, and poking around on a few systems here and there. And then I think Stranger Things pushed that forward, wanting to learn what this was. And I have three brothers. So I said, you know, we've grown up playing video games together, you know, since all of us could, you know, button mash. And yeah, it's like, well, yeah, you know, there we go. I've got three players that could get together, and it was a struggle to do so. You know, we kind of tested a couple things or tried to get together, and I think it was, you know, it was all about which we can touch on more in depth later. But just when you dive into tabletops, I that's really interesting to me is there is and isn't, I think, very good instructions on how to get into it. So it was just that diving into it and trying to figure it out as I went. And so that was like where I started. Systems wise, I think one of the first ones I looked up was the old West End game Star Wars system, D6. Never have actually played it. I think eventually I then ended up on an online D&D 5e game and then found Star Wars 5e, the fan conversion, and things nice. Really took off from there. Yeah.
So I want to back up real quick because you attribute Stranger Things to being maybe the nudge over the line.
Yeah.
How soon, maybe before that, did you have this awareness that it was something that you might be interested in, and kind of where did that come from?
Yeah, that, and as I kind of said, like that's a little foggy to me. I think we watched Stranger Things. We didn't watch Stranger Things live, like when it came out. We watched, season one, maybe two, after the fact. Like, we didn't get into it right away, and then we're like, oh, we should watch this. So certainly not, when that first aired, whenever that was. But as I said, I'm not sure if it was that or if there was just, I was just looking for something to do and for some reason somehow came across tabletops. I had kind of gotten back into reading. And so I was on a few different subreddits. There's like a fantasy subreddit, which is all just talking about fantasy books, sci fantasy, et cetera. And there probably was some overlap here and there where things would like pop in and see references to things. And, that could have kind of started it as well.
You've got Moonbounce in your name, your brand, I guess, is that fair to say? And I get the impression sometimes that fiction is a big interest of yours. Did it perhaps start with science fiction if you started with, say, the Star Wars game, or at least an awareness of it?
Sci-fi?
Yeah, or was it fantasy? Was fantasy really the driver, or was it sci-fi, or was it just a mix of both?
In regards to tabletops, it wasn't, I don't know if it was, anything specific in that regard. Because, as I said, I think, so some of the stuff, I read through a lot of systems. Maze Rats by Ben Milton, if you're familiar with that, was one of those first ones I looked up, and it's a real simple-based system there, and I just, what it was, what it did was super interesting to me. And I had no clue what I was doing with it. But I had this itch to try it out. Stars Without Number was one of those. I'm trying to think of all these little random systems that I don't think, are definitely not, your front page, if you will, like the 5Es and Pathfinders, et cetera. I think, again, I was bumming around on those Reddits, those subreddits, and came across this stuff. So as far as genre, I'm not particularly big on one or the other. I guess I lean sci-fi because I think that's the one that I feel I can fake the best.
Good way to put it.
Yeah.
I get the impression that perhaps you started as the DM or the game master. That was your job.
Yeah. So when I very first got into it, it was, definitely was going to take on that role. I think I did maybe two, and I'll call them like play test sessions with my brothers, of us just figuring it out, and I was the one like, all right, I'm going to figure out how to run this. And we did a couple things because we didn't get all four of us together at once. It was me and two of them, and then another one with me and another combination of the other two. And just kind of figuring that stuff out. And then my first like true experience was as a player, because I had joined a random 5e game through Roll20. I think it was Roll20 and or Reddit, looking for player post type thing, and hopped into that. And that was that. We went with the 5e starter Minds of Phandelver, and that was my first taste.
Nice. This is a cool origin story because it's, and Aaron, back me up if you have thoughts, but it's a little bit unusual, I think, from most of the stories that we hear, because mostly, kids, people get into it when they were kids, and it's this long history of like, well, when I was little, my siblings played it or whatever. So it's interesting to hear in terms of it being more recent for you.
I think it's just so off the radar for me, to be honest. Like, I can't go back and think of, and I'm not super familiar with the timeline of tabletops, but, just to share, I don't even know the generation that I am. I know it's a split. I think like millennial and then, 80s baby, if you will. And so depending on the timeline of tabletops there, I think, just the exposure growing up in the 90s and then the internet came around and I was a band geek through school, got a guitar eventually there and was real dedicated to the music, and things like that. And then learned how to loosely code websites with good old Yahoo GeoCities there. And all that fun stuff, when the internet started really blowing up, in that, and just for some reason never came across tabletops. I maybe had heard of Dungeons and Dragons in passing, but as far as I can think of, like, it never really registered. So yeah, just kind of interesting that not till now, because of something like Stranger Things, it really helped, put it on the map for me.
Right.
That's funny.
Would you say that Stranger Things introduced that concept that this was not Yahtzee, for example, or, another sort of board game, like, quote, typical board game? Did you have that sense before that it was story driven?
Yeah, a little bit before, I think. A little bit. Leading up to it, I would say, I think Stranger Things was a lot more of, just as I said earlier, pushing me over the edge to get into it. I think I kind of understood loosely because I played RPG video games here and there. Lord of the Rings Online, played a lot of that and really, really enjoyed that one. That was another one, I played with my brothers. As I said, we played video games all the time. And so that was one. City of Heroes, I think, was one of those. We would get you'd get the trial. So we would download the trial. We're sitting in the corner bedroom in the house, stealing internet from the neighbors because our internet wasn't very good, and just run around doing that stuff. And, some of them, they got into World of Warcraft Online and that stuff. Never did there. I stuck with Lord of the Rings Online. I really enjoyed that one. It was funny that I forget when it clicked for me, but I think I went back to LOTRO. I loaded LOTRO back up one time and I was like, oh my gosh, this is a RPG. Like, it just, for some reason, it clicked for me. Like, the game is rolling dice and all this stuff. And it was a great little kind of connection that was made there between the two. Yeah.
I was going to say too, that it's interesting to me that not only is there not that similar kind of history that we typically hear, but also that the games you got into were sort of off the mainstream, like you were saying.
Yeah, a little bit more independent. Yeah, independent stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Indies, some that lean into some OSR stuff. The Knave, Maze Rats, and all these little, I think, like, I forget when I discovered Mouse Ritter. I think that was super early on, and I thought, oh, this is a super cool game. And I forget when I had came across Mothership quite a while ago as well, and just never did anything with it until I think short, like, sometime after I had met Rich, that old DM, and I think he kind of pulled it back up and said, hey, this is super cool. I'm like, yeah, like, I've looked at it before. We should definitely do something with it. So, but yeah, it was just, for some reason, just digging through those subreddits and things, I think, is where a lot of that came from, was looking into these, not to call them random, but compared to the popular systems, these other systems. Yeah.
I was just going to say, yeah, that's a cool perspective to kind of be introduced with. It's not the same perspective that you typically get. You kind of get a unique angle coming in. But what were you going to say, Dan?
Well, it also follows that this follows up with what I was thinking, that you went from video games backward to tabletop, it sounds like. Whereas for my generation, there were no video games for this, really. Right. So D&D laid the foundation for a lot of fantasy video games because that was a logical transition, although we know it's not a one-for-one equivalent, that there would be those games. So when I started playing D&D in middle school in the early 80s, there wasn't really anything like that. There was like ColecoVision's adventure game, I think it was. Maybe it was Atari. I actually don't remember. And then there were the PC games on floppy disk for Baldur's Gate and things like that that started to come out. And of course, we started with text-based games, and then they gradually went to slightly better and slightly better 16-bit, 32-bit, you know, graphics and things like that.
Yeah, you play any King's Quest? That was one I remember from...
Honestly, I might have. I don't even know if I can remember.
Yeah, it was a fun that, you know, it was one of those games where you like text-based commands. So you tell it like walk left or inspect the well and things like that. Yeah. So.
Yep. Definitely there were a number of those out there. Very fun. It's fun to review or to walk back through those eras of development with this stuff. But
definitely.
I didn't realize Mothership was quite as old as it is, at least 2018.
Yeah, I think so. You know, and I didn't discover it that early, I don't think. I forget when I first did, but it's been around, and it's wild because it's what it's become. I mean, that system has taken off and you know, it's just so much fun. Mm-hmm. Have you had the pleasure to play that yet, Aaron?
I haven't yet, but it looks, it is
so good. Yeah.
It looks really good. Yeah, definitely. And I am surprised it did kind of blow up, especially somewhat recently.
Yeah. I mean, the Kickstarter was definitely the big thing I think was last fall is when that happened. So that was,
That makes sense.
Massive attention there, but yeah.
So it really only hit the market in the last year and a half or so.
I would say so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's hopeful for another game I can think of that starts with the letter N.
Absolutely.
A little bit of exposure for a couple of years before it actually hits the market. So are you and your brothers, or are any of your brothers, or are you one of those, what we call the crunchy board gamer types? Do you play those games as well? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think so, but no. We didn't really get into, you know, we growing up, we definitely had all the, you know, classics like Monopoly Uno or those types of games there that we definitely played quite a bit here and there. But not anything else in crunchy strategy, things like that. Never really got into that stuff. Probably a big part of that is, you know, once video games came around and you know, that definitely filled, I would say, you know, maybe replaced that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sometimes we find an overlap with that and sometimes there's not. And in past podcasts, we've talked about that a little bit. The fact that I definitely did not come from that direction, but Aaron has. Mm-hmm. So we meet in the middle on having that overlap, whereas it's either one or none for the people that we talk to.
Yeah.
Definitely a nice, it's definitely an interesting perspective to bring in with the much more crunchy systems on hand in terms of like how I look at games, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would think I was going to, you know, ask, what do you think what that relation is there? I'm definitely not a mechanics focused player in RPGs, tabletop RPGs. I don't retain that information super well. I've been playing the games for a few years now. And even then I still sometimes have to go to the rule book. And I mean, you know, not that, you know, that doesn't happen because some of these games have a lot of rules, but,
totally.
You know, I do know people that, you know, they learn those mechanics just like Tegan, who's in the other half of Dungeon Jedi Masters, is amazing with the mechanics in Star Wars 5e. You know, and I think that's just would be one thing that would not deter me, but with a crunchy board game, you know, wouldn't really be something I'd be super into. But I would wonder, you know, Aaron, you do see that in development and whatnot, a good connection from that overlap?
Yeah, I do see a connection. For instance, when I first got into D&D, I approached it more like in the board game sense. Like I knew it was a storytelling experience and that whole thing. But when it came down to sitting in like, how do I actually play this game? I was all about the mechanics. I had like a period of time where right after I got the game, just making characters, like theoretical characters, and playing with stats and abilities. Yes, that's how I started as a min-maxer. And it's because I started from that board game angle. Because
yeah,
when you're playing board games, like a lot of times you'll kind of come into this like, how can I, the kind of cutthroat mentality, like how can I use all the rules of the game to achieve, you know, victory? Mm-hmm. And so when you take that similar concept to something more open, like role-playing game, I think it translates pretty easily into, first at least, into that min-maxing kind of thing. And so now as like a developer where I've balanced that out with more story kind of development and processing, now as a developer, I think that it's given me this kind of ability to at least look at the rules and just kind of adopt that power gamer mindset and be like, how can I abuse the crap out of these? And what do I as a developer have to fix? Or like, what do we as developers have to fix about it, you know?
Right.
Or not fix. Like, is this working as intended? And it's sort of like a skill. And it does get easier, like, after playing so many board games, and you're like, okay, yeah, like, I know what this is. This is a similar system and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
So there is awesome. That as well.
It just occurred to me that... Oh, sorry, Todd.
I want to shout out Maitree. I don't know if you know her, a great individual, but she has a Maitree Plays Games YouTube channel, and she did a video the other day, 8 ways to have fun related to as GMs and players, and just on the topic of like the power gamer, for example. You know, it's interesting because I don't want to say that puts me off a min-maxer type or whatever. But I'm definitely not that type when I approach these games, definitely more about the story and things like that. But it was a great video that she did that talks about those eight different types of fun that people like to have. So you have one that's the min-maxer, the gamer, and they want to go through and optimize like that. And then you have the others that are looking for, you know, exploration or whatever. So, yeah, super cool. Just how, like, once you realize those, you know, you get 4, 5, 6 different people at a table. It's interesting what those different people might have in mind for what they want out of the experience. And I think that's amazing about tabletops.
Absolutely.
Yeah. This whole topic of min-maxing I reflected on it as I had to learn that min-maxing was for some people, an integral focus for role-playing games. It always felt to me like the odd one out because it seemed so, so board gamey, I guess. Whereas the rest, you know, role playing and exploration and problem solving and puzzles and all that kind of stuff seemed more homogenous. Then I had to realize that no, you know, min-maxing is for some people the ultimate point of enjoyment with these games. It's where they get to be the most powerful. You know, that's what's satisfying. And so any, for anybody out there who's a game master who's uncomfortable with min-maxers, embrace your min-maxer if you have one, because they're having fun.
Yeah, and that's the name of the game with these games that we play is make sure everyone has fun. And that's, you know, again, a nod to that video that Maitree did. It's all about learning what each player comes to and what they want and what they like in a game, what they do for fun, and then leaning into that. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask a little bit, about your maybe media influences. You said you got back into reading. So are there particular authors that inspire you? Are there favorite movies that once you found gaming, you're like, oh, now I can put this, I can be that, you know, that hero from that movie or that storyline or something like that?
Not specifically. I think like I got into drawing a blank on the name of the series, Patrick Rothfuss, that it's unfinished.
Name of the Wind, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think I started there. That was like a coworker was like, hey, this is a great book. You should check it out. And so I read that and then the follow-up, Wise Man's Fear. And as everyone, we're all waiting for that third book, of course. But, you know, it was very interesting there. And I think that was a little bit maybe of getting me into that fantasy interest. And then from there, same coworker suggested The Gunslinger by Stephen King, the Dark Tower series. So I read the first book there, got hooked, went and bought a box set online and ripped through that entire, I think, 7-book series, whatever it is. I still got to read the middle, like 4.5, went through the keyhole, I believe it is. But that was another one. And that I really enjoyed. And to your question, yeah, I think it wasn't so much like I need to put this into my game, but it was just, it started those gears moving. Like, could I, how can I, you know, looking at a system here, can I borrow these storylines, all that stuff, and starting to think about that process. Since then, I have borrowed lots of storylines here and there from things and you know, either very obviously or very subtly. And there's nothing, I wouldn't say there's anything specific out there that I'd say is inspiration. It's just in a very, very loose sense. It's kind of the way that I consume media. You know, very loosely. So it's tough to sometimes remember some of those specifics, authors, titles, things like that. But I remember the concepts and whatnot. So that's what sticks with me. And that's what kind of ends up in being in the material that I produce.
Gotcha. Are there systems out there? I'm sure there are. What are some games or systems that you want to play that you haven't yet?
There is one, and this was another one of those that like I picked up early on, called Beyond the Wall and Other Adventures. Cool little system there. It has a great little, so like it has what they call playbooks for your characters. And you go through and you answer a bunch of questions to build out your character. And along that way, there are questions that will connect you with other players at the table. And then I believe either during that process or after the process, then you build out like your starting town. So you have like your starting village. And then there's questions that connect everyone. And along those, yes, during those playbooks, there'll be little symbols that'll be like, you know, here's a location or here's a NPC or et cetera. And so a piece about your character, you then get to create for the, you know, world or the village, if you will. So you know, it might be something like you ran into this individual, you had a dealing with this individual, who is that? And then they become somebody established in the world. And I love that concept. I love how it connects all the players together right away and, you know, builds that world out. So, but yeah, that's one I haven't touched yet that I would definitely love to. Beyond that, Lasers and Feelings is one I want to check out. That one seems pretty cool.
Lasers and Feelings?
Yeah.
Ever heard about that one?
Yeah, so I couldn't tell you much about it without being in front of me, but basically there's two stats, like lasers and feelings, and it's if you approach this, I think like, if you know, if it's lasers being weaponry and then feelings being you know, social emotional thing, and you have different ratings on how good you are in either. And it's I think simple dice rolls. I think it's D6 based, but it's one of those that there's a lot of hacks of it because of the simple core system there. So Yeah.
Nice. That does sound pretty interesting.
Yeah. I'd say another one I guess I could add is the One Ring. I have that sitting on the shelf, but I haven't ran through that one yet, but need to.
Yeah, we have that floating around in our midst because one of my kids has it.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
it's beautiful. Really, I backed it largely because of just how beautiful it all is. As I said, I wouldn't say like I'm a massive Lord of the Rings fan. A little more casual of a fan, you know, have the movies, have enjoyed those and played a lot of Lord of the Rings online, but you know it well enough that it was nice to pick that up, to have it in this form. And as I said, you know, it's just a nice book to thumb through. Mm-hmm.
So along with gaming, I happen to know you as well as a producer as much as anything.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that. Like, what's this producing angle? How did you go this direction?
Yeah. So I'm a creative by day. I basically during the day, I slap logos onto tchotchkes, promotional products, t-shirts, pens, etc., stress balls. So that's kind of my daytime gig. But went to school for graphic design and advertising, and you know, never really stuck a job that I really wanted to with that, but fell into the promotional product industry and enjoyed it enough. And now I'm self-employed doing that with a counterpart. But yeah, so tabletops, I realized, you know, I got into tabletops to play them and just enjoyed that. And then I would say, once I got into Star Wars 5e, I was playing. So Tegan, who's the other half of Dungeon Jedi Masters, we actually live in the same city. And I joined one of his in-person games. So this was, you know, feels like forever ago before the pandemic when we actually, you know, it's much easier to go out and do things. So we were meeting at a local game shop and playing a game, you know, once a week, once or maybe biweekly. And that was such a fun experience to do so. And because he was running Star Wars 5e, we both got involved in the project there. And it was like, hey, let's start this, you know, podcast and talk about the game. Let's, you know, kind of help people learn about the game. And so we came together and created Dungeon Jedi Masters and started as a podcast. And we did that. We talked about the game. We went through all the rules, the classes and features and everything. And eventually blossomed into what it is now. So like we both do actual plays, we produce other content, things like that. And the actual plays, I don't really look at a lot of that stuff as producing. You know, not to be too long-winded in the response here, but you know, it's just doing actual plays on and streaming them. And it was just, you know, I didn't use cameras for a while there. We just got on all voice and played the game through Roll20, things like that. And hadn't put too much thought into, you know, the higher level production process, if you will. But then really started to realize that this content was giving me this outlet that my daytime job wasn't. Allowed me to be creative in ways that I wanted to, but wasn't being able to. And so I really started to tell myself or say, you know, okay, what else can I do? How can I push this? How can I go forward? And I joined a game with Valor Studios, Deadlands, Savage World System. And I joined a game as a cast member with that. And that was, I think, being a part of it, because I've seen, you know, Critical Roles out there and all that, you know, other stuff like that. And but being in this actual play where we all dressed up, you know, and there was a focus on the production there. And I was just like, this is really cool. This is really cool. And I want to step up my own content, you know, my actual plays. I want to step them up and you know, have them be at that higher level. So that's when I would really say like my production journey, I guess, kind of got kicked off like that. And I think I want to say, was it when did we connect there, Ty? Was it end of last year when we connected on New of Arden?
Well, we connected, first of all, through Luna's.
Yes, that's right. Yep. Shout out to Luna and mm-hmm. Tales from the Tavern.
And my mom, Luna,
happened to be on the show together. And,
you know, that has to be a year and a half, I think. Wasn't that winter?
Or for the show?
Yeah.
Probably. So.
So 2020? I think about a year and a half. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely a good bit ago. And I think just kind of stayed in touch. I joined her server October of 21. So I probably would have joined right when we were on. So it was probably, mm-hmm. that's when it probably was. So yeah, fall of 21.
Okay. So a year. Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, cause so we worked, New of Arden, the project we worked on, I see right now says 5 months ago, when we did that, but yeah, just as far as the production, it was just, it's always been that creative outlet that I felt I haven't gotten otherwise. And it's just been so much fun to do and kind of just push it and see what I can do. Speaking of that New of Arden project, The Lost Child, that was probably the first one where it went beyond the actual play, right? It was, we did the trailer there
right. The video trailer with all the graphics and yeah.
Yeah, just putting all that stuff together and helping you all out with that. And then really, it's something I always tried to do, but really, aligning that actual play with the game itself, the style, the theme and graphics and all that stuff there. And it was a blast. Well,
came together really well. So I hope there's, you've done some things like that since then too, right?
Yeah, so I have, and it's been fantastic. Definitely my own project I've done, but I've had two other since then. Two other projects that I've worked with other individuals and their games. So the first one was with Back Roads, was the game, which is an expansion to Backwater TTRPG. Ace and Alex that developing that one. So I reached out to put something together and had a blast. And so I got to learn a new system and we put that together. And then the latest one was for Titan Effect, setting for Savage Worlds, so kind of a tactical espionage a la Metal Gear Solid. So another one like that.
Nice.
You mentioned stepping up actual plays. You have great costuming, for example. So when it's on screen, and I felt like this too, when I ran Into the Gates on Time Lord's Wife's channel, even I dressed up. I had the mm-hmm. guy liner and everything going because I feel like, actual plays, we haven't, I don't want to sound too critical, but we kind of have enough of seeing people in just their daily clothing with their whatever. Mm-hmm. It's so much more entertaining to watch people in costume in addition, I think. Not too much. It doesn't have to be so overdone that you're more distracted by the visuals than you are by the play.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But what do you see, if anything, where the future of actual play is going? Is there any kind of inkling from maybe the production side that you can tell? Can we expect any kind of a paradigm shift in that regard, or if not a paradigm shift, at least an evolution of presentation in your estimation?
Honestly, I'm not too sure with that because I think it's not Wild West is the right description of it, but there's just so much out there, and I think it still is kind of figuring itself out. Critical Role, again, I think really was one of those that really set things off. There's probably lots of other groups that were doing things along with them. But they obviously were the ones to create a lot of the popularity of it, doing these action plays. It's okay, everyone wants to show off their game and wants, show these great stories of you playing and things like that. The stuff that I put together, is not for everyone. That's another aspect, I think, is the audiences, the different audiences. Yeah. There's a certain audience that I think I might lean towards. You'd have your audiences that want to come for the gameplay. They aren't going to care if you're in your, you know, your band t-shirt and whatever. They're, you know, maybe a little more of a crunchy type player. They want to see that grid on the screen and follow along with that and the dice rolls and all that. So there's certainly not a catch-all, I think. And so we're just, I think that's the big thing is if your intent is to capture an audience and build, you know, a brand or build a product out of your actual plays, you know, there's a lot of work to be done there in figuring out who your audience is and then catering to that audience. Because you can't just say I make actual plays for the tabletop RPG community, because there's subsets within that for sure, as I mentioned. So, you know, anything where it's going, what any big changes, you know, I'm not sure. Maybe just dialing in more of what I, you know, was just kind of touching on.
I do think I'm seeing more and more costuming, and personally, I like it. It's interesting you bring up Critical Role because they really, I mean, they launched it for everyone as far as actual plays go. The thing for me that's so nostalgic about Critical Role is that first season was so awkward. It was beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they had technical problems. They had uncertainty issues. They were not on there with any sort of pressure. They just went out. The only pressure was, geez, I hope we get more than five people watching this.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and it just kept going and kept going. And it was pure unadulterated refinement. There was a lack of refinement, let's put it that way. Now in the last five years, things have really evolved in some ways that probably looking back, if we really thought about it, would be kind of surprising. So we're seeing other levels of production that do incorporate that costuming as part of their presentation, again, which I really like. We're seeing more of it. Critical Role does not do that a lot. They have a nice set, of course. Their studio,
yeah, their production value overall, while cosplay and things don't fit into that necessarily, like everything else there. And that's, you know, what you touched on, like their very first stuff was very raw. And there was a certain appeal to that. But now I think, you know, people that will, I think that's where the comparison is going to be more likely is their current stuff, you know, this very high quality, high production, you know, content.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So in light of that consideration, so maybe we have at the high end of production, we have Critical Role with all their super professionalism and what have you. And then we have, I don't know, Little Adventure Sling podcast here, having conversations because we love it. What are things that people should know about your particular brand of production? Like what, and your services, what would you say you offer for the person that comes to you and says, I would like your help producing my thing?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the focus is, and this is something that, you know, I've been thinking about, you know, what I'm going to do kind of going forward, looking into the next year and things like that. I've started some loose concepts of helping players get into actual plays. So you've never done, you've played games, but you've never, you know, been on an actual play. And I want to help, I want to get you into a seat and go through expectations, etiquette, equipment, just some suggestions that I've learned along the way to help brand new players there, so that then they can go out and be comfortable applying to an actual play, thing like that, and show up and be ready for that. But you know, I think that's the overall is just kind of like education and you know, also showcasing the game. So in the games that I've done showcases of Titan Effect and Back Road specifically. It was, you know, it was a good presentation. Visual presentation was the first thing, bringing in some great talent as well to help show off the game, and then show off the mechanics and the system during that as well. So, you know, both of them, but Backroads, I remember specifically being a brand new system to all of us. You know, we definitely play that game, but along the way, naturally rolled in what we were doing, how the mechanics work, things like that, so that anyone else that checks that out, they'll get hints of that. And we explain how those rules work, things like that. So, yeah, if someone out there was looking to show off their game, their setting, et cetera, you know, that would be, the expectation is I'm going to present an actual play, with high quality players, you know, good understanding of the system and sharing that to the viewers, as a good reference point of, you know, what your system can do, highlighting the special points as well too.
This brings to mind, there's sort of a three-part harmony to this industry, that's a bit of a harsh word, I think, but to this hobby of tabletop role-playing game. You've got folks that have heard of it now, who it's sort of floating around in their periphery. Then you have the people who have not tried it yet, but want to, but they're intimidated by it. So there's like, we're looking for like, what's the avenue to introduce them to a place where it's comfortable for them to come in and learn how to play the game so they can love it like we all do. And then there's the technological overlap that you're talking about. And that is how to do this live, or how to do this on a stream, or how to do this in front of a microphone or whatever.
Right.
And I'm just making an observation, but it's like, there are these levels now because of the evolution of it with the introduction of live plays or actual plays back to Critical Role, up to where we're at today and where we're going in the future, that says, here are your options, new player. Would you like to just learn the game to begin with? Do you want to be in an actual play? Do you want to practice your acting chops, you know, for an audience, things like that? So there's just layers upon layers building now. And it sounds like you see that as not changing. That's going to continue.
Yeah, I think so. I think more and more, you know, people are going to want to get into, you know, what actual plays can offer. And backing up a little bit, you know, the actual plays that I put together, as I kind of said, like, I have somewhat of a specific audience in mind, you know, those that are coming for a story, for a show, a production. And so that's why, you know, that's why I put focus on the elements of those that I do. But as I also mentioned, you could show up, you know, no cameras, just show a battle map on the screen, roll 20 or whatever you want to use, and play the game. You know, just turn on microphones in your living room and play the game as if it was a home game. And I think there's an audience for that as well. And I think getting into this community, this industry, you know, whatever, it's all about, what are you, if you're a GM or a showrunner, producer, et cetera, why are you creating the content that you're creating? Who are you creating it for? I think are the important questions there.
Smart way to look at it.
Yeah.
Definitely. I think that's fair to say too, because there really is a wide variety of what kind of, like, the ways that the game is presented, I guess. Like, I also think about the different podcasts that operate to, you know, share the game as we all are kind of doing, but without any of the visual elements, and you know, finding ways to make that a creative and immersive experience. So it's a smart way to look at it, you know, knowing who's watching your stuff and what do they like, and is it, you know, is it what you're making, or vice versa, I guess.
Yeah, and there's so many different ways that people consume content as well. I prefer a physical copy of a book. If I'm trying to consume that information, I need that so I can read through it. I can't retain it very well with digital. Digital, though, is fantastic for reference, you know, because you can search digital and things like that. So you know, same with this content. You know, maybe you need those visuals, or maybe you need those faces of the people to get into their emotions and understand things, or, you know, utilizing things like closed caption, in other, accessibility type, tools and things. Or somebody, you know, somebody could more than well listen to just an audio only podcast and really get into it. You know, and as long as you are conscious of that audience and that format, you know, and calling things out, you know, calling out roles that you make and this and that. So.
Absolutely. And now I'm thinking about things. My mind's like, oh, thinking about defining audiences.
Yeah, I got your wheels going, huh?
Yeah.
That's funny.
So you're doing the producing and thinking about these things and looking at the angles. How about long-term goals? Are there any, what's your, maybe your ideal or your dream result, or maybe just a couple of things that you would like to see?
Yeah. So I think, you know, I touched on it a little bit, so that, so this concept called Actual Play Academy is, I think the thing that I'm after. I've ran one session of it so far, and I think it went very well. It seems quite received from the couple of individuals that I had on there. So basically, and there's a lot of, aspects, arms to this whole concept, but, this one was focused on for players, brought them on. We had about an hour offline session talking about what an actual play is. And, you know, going, as I said, through the suggested equipment, etiquette being on an actual play, expectations being on an actual play. And then we spent the second hour, the second half, running an actual play. We played a quick scenario. We used D&D 5e in this one. And it was just a chance for them to, you know, it's like, you are on camera right now, you know, so keep everything in mind. But at the same time, let's play this. And also recording that, so they now have a piece of footage that they can go to another actual play and say, here's an example of my work. You know, because I think that is important to a lot of people when you apply to an actual play. You know, you want to make sure that you have the good equipment, the internet speed, the camera, all that stuff, things like that, and you have a decent on-air presence for some of those actual plays. You know, not all of them, but it is important for some people. And so that was one thing I want to offer. And then it goes beyond that with helping. So players, that's kind of a player focused aspect of it. You know, helping GMs if they're running some things, but leaning into that producing as well, showrunners as well. What are all the different elements? You know, setting up overlays for your stream, managing the stream itself, you know, all those different concepts like that. So that is, yeah, that's my current kind of long-term project that I'm slowly putting together.
You mentioned that the etiquette aspect and presentation and readiness technologically and presence-wise, stuff like that. I think that probably is going to become more and more in demand. Things are actually, they seem to be moving more toward paid
opportunities. Yeah.
Opportunities. Good word. Yeah. Which.
Yeah. A lot of it out there, you know, and, if you are bringing people on, you know, if you are asking them to come with equipment and things like that, you know, their compensation should probably be discussed. You know, not everyone can do that. A lot of us are just friends hanging around and playing this, and that's fine. But you know, I think you need to be mindful of that as well.
Yeah, I think we are in an era where exposure does matter. Opportunities to do these things do help. But at some point, because this is so new, at some point there's going to be an establishment of veterans in addition to those that are already there.
Yep.
Where I almost envision the market shrinking to a degree once things... There may be some catalyst that comes along and says, okay, things have shifted now. The expectations have risen. The scope is more narrow. And the entertainment value is also going up, because that seems to be kind of how these things evolve. If we go back to radio, go back to television, go back to movies, they got better and better and better when they first started off as a gimmick, kind of, or they were perceived that way. It's, you know, gradually no longer becomes that. And technology has a big role to play in that. But we obviously we wouldn't be talking about it if it didn't. But it will continue to evolve. And it seems logical to think that that's the direction it would go. To me, anyway, I'm sort of...
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
The other aspect is there's basically no barrier of entry to doing this. You know, anyone can... You don't even need a camera. As long as you have audio, you know, Discord is free. Get on there, hop into voice chat, send that out to Twitch, and you're running an actual play, right? Like you sit around, mm-hmm. You don't even have to be on Roll 20. It could literally just be a screen with the logo of your game and the audio comes through and you know, that's that, or doing podcast version. So right. The barrier of entry is very low. So I think you still have a large group of people still doing it. But I still agree with what you're saying, Ty, that, you know, you will probably start seeing a lot more of the same faces mm-hmm. in some of the bigger productions. Yeah.
Seems so. Good. Is there anything else about any of your services? That's a pretty good scope. Actually, thanks for sharing that. I hopefully people find that, you know, as they continue to think about their own projects, we're going to need folks who do what you do to help us. Because, for example, the overlays and things like that, I have no clue. Aaron, you're my tech savior when it comes to adventure slang. Mm-hmm. But there's always a learning curve with something new like that. And there's not always time to learn it, too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's something I enjoy. I think the art creation side is one aspect that I really, really enjoy about it all. I love running games, but, you know, the creative side is what I enjoy. And I've just, you know, I do have the educational background, but also just kind of figuring things out specifically related to this as I've gone along. And always happy to, you know, assist in that in any way I can.
It's one of the beauties of this whole thing, that all the components of our passions and interests can come together here, just short of maybe sports, but I guess that's what LARPing is for. Mm-hmm. We can bring together our art, you know, our visual art, our written art, our acting, our music, our production skills, lights, camera, action. There's something for everyone with their particular interests to create in this space, whether it's knitting dice bags or making dice or creating their own game systems and things like that. Yeah. So it's one of the things I love about it. And I really enjoy learning what other people like yourself can bring in a skill set that is quite foreign to me, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So where can people find you?
Pretty much on the internet at Todd Moonbounce. So Twitter at Todd Moonbounce, and then Twitch and YouTube would be two main spots for video content. Eventually I'll get around to getting my website up and running, toddmoonbounce.com.
Perfect.
Nice.
Aaron, do you have any final thoughts? I always like to throw back to you right at the end.
Nothing to tack on to the doorknob confessions.
Okay. Todd, thanks for joining us. It's been great having this discussion, and we look forward to seeing what else you produce going forward.
Absolutely. A pleasure. Great to talk with both of you, and look forward to working together again soon.
All right.
Talk to you then.